This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to another in our special summer series of A Big Country, where we're bringing you some of our favourite stories from our team of reporters in regional Australia. I'm Edwina Farley. This week, it's a bumper food edition. We join keen gardeners and home cooks at a neighbourhood food swap, tuck into some saffron scones washed down with a pot of saffron tea, enjoy a delicious Chinese meal in Tasmania. All the meat is grown on the family farm, and go finger lime picking on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. It's a job that takes protective clothing and a good deal of care if you're going to get through the day without drawing blood.
And I'm just loving the various outfits all your pickers have.
Yeah, it's pretty standard stuff, really. Thorn-proof gloves and arm protectors, which are sort of very light Kevlar sort of material.
You're the gladiators yes. of the fruit picking world.
You could say that, yes, yes.
It's a good thing the fruit is so delicious, otherwise it would never get picked. Finger limes on the menu later in the show, but let's get this food bonanza episode underway with a trip to Brookfield in southeast Queensland, where the trestle tables are groaning under the weight of local produce.
Oh yeah, macadamia would be good.
Awesome. I sold some chilies for some jerky.
Oh yeah.
I just wanted to say thanks for coming along. This is the third anniversary of the food swap starting. So yeah. Thanks for coming along and making it what it is.
Freshly roasted this morning, Mum. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Every month, the crowd gathers in a suburb on the outskirts of Brisbane in southeast Queensland. They're keen gardeners, hobby growers and home cooks who come together to swap advice, recycle materials and share the fruits of their labours. Hello, I'm Hayley Reno. Welcome to the Brookfield Food Swap. It's the brainchild of local resident Georgie Townsend.
We now have over 600 people who follow the swap from, 100 in the first year, so it's really fantastic that it's grown. And I know not everyone comes every month, but it's nice that you can come back and feel welcome and part of the swap.
And in the crowd for the very first time ever are the Mortensen family from Brookfield.
Hi, I'm Warwick Mortensen. This is my wife.
Liz, hello.
Warwick's definitely got a green thumb and has turned his large acreage block into a fruit and vegetable growing paradise.
Fruit growing along there.
Mm-hmm. There's also passion fruit that you probably can't see from here, but there's oodles of passion fruit there. There's kumquats, there's white guava, there's coffee growing in there, mandarin, lemons, oranges and limes in that section. That's figs, which I've just got into recently in the last year and a half.
The family is busy getting their goods ready to take to the swap meet.
We've got lemon mint that's fresh from this morning, curry leaves. You want to explain your jam?
That's a very, very strong tasting lemon and sultana with Indian herbs, chicken relish that could either be put onto the chicken before cooking or used after cooking. It's really, really strong and tasty. It's delicious.
So all the stuff looks like a great little bounty, and you said you've got more.
Oh, this is probably 10%.
Okay, so plenty more to come. But you're basically going to get rid of this. Someone else is going to walk home with it at the end of today. What are you hoping to get back for some of this stuff?
Look, I'm happy to give things away. I'd like just to see what other people are growing.
Rosemary, there's a whole lot of turmeric there. You've got curry leaf, you've got olives, probably about 15 pawpaws or red papaya.
You can hear it in Warwick's voice that he's pretty enthusiastic about getting his hands dirty and growing things, but there's other benefits too.
Warwick works long hours, he's in an office. To come home and just go down into the paddock, it's kind of a bit of, we call it his therapy, that he goes down there and just spends a few hours on the weekend or a couple of hours after work down in the paddock, playing with his garden, with his figs, with his sort of newfound hobby, and it's therapeutic. It's just emotionally calming for him. He comes back up, and I never know what he's bringing up from the paddock, whether it's going to be some fruit or some vegetables, and it's a good hobby. It's a healthy, happy hobby, and it's also good for the kids to spend some one-on-one time with dad down in the paddock.
Thanks, mate. How are you?
Good. Back at the Brookfield Food Swap, the crowds are gathering and tables are groaning under the weight of produce on offer.
So I don't know what that is. Have a look. See if it makes your taste.
Oh, it smells good. That's really nice, yes.
It's a happy sight for organiser Georgie Townsend, who established the swap meet to bring her community closer together.
One winter's morning, I decided to make a Facebook page, just starting a food swap, and did up some really shoddy homemade posters. Looked like a kid drew them, and stuck them up at a few local notice boards. And that's how it started. And we held the first of a few weeks later. And we had maybe 40 people turn up to the first one, so obviously the community's really supportive of the idea, and it sort of rolled on from there. I think the swap's really just an excuse for people to connect. I think in today's age there seems to be a lack of connecting with strangers, and this is a great way to bring people together. And I think just after one swap, people actually feel like they know people, and they look forward to seeing them again at the next swap. So it's really about community, and that's what I really, really wanted to create, a sense of community. But one thing that's also really nice about the swap is the value of things changes. A jar of honey, which might seem really precious to some, is equal to a bunch of herbs to another person, because they don't grow that and they've got an excess of honey. So it's not always about the equal value. You'll always feel like you walk away with more than you've brought. The only rule is no monetary exchange. If you want to do that, find another means to, but this is about talking to each other and making connections. And the food really is just an excuse, I think.
My name is Darren Monterson, and I live at Bilberry. So I've brought down some chilies that I actually grew on the footpath of my home. Brought down some butternut pumpkins and some Vietnamese mint and Greek basil that I've grown from cuttings. Yeah.
How long have you been involved with the food swap?
Since it started, 3 years ago. And I learned something every time. I learned today that the Rosella plant there is an annual plant. I thought it was a tree that just kept growing, but now apparently you've got to plant it every year. So, yeah, so learn a bit.
Hi, Catherine Ryan. I live at Brookfield. I've picked some custard apples. We've had a wonderful crop this year, so I've brought those down to share.
And what are you hoping to swap them for?
I was thinking maybe some chilies and some herbs, but I don't really mind. It's bringing the things along, which is half the fun, and meeting the people.
Have you got chutney?
I've got the chutney.
So how was it for newcomers Warwick and Elizabeth Mortensen? Did the Brookfield swap live up to their expectations?
Okay, so this is the hall.
Yeah, so we've got four different types of pumpkin.
Some limes.
We've got cheese.
Oh, did you get a balsamic dip?
We've got coffee from Papua New Guinea that was roasted this morning. We've got white sweet potato. Chocos, we're ready to go on the ground for planting. And there's about five different chilies in there.
Local honey, some mustard mango pickle. Yum, that looks
and
fabulous.
And custard apple.
And some more mango chutney.
And there's probably a couple other little things at the bottom which
strawberry jam.
You can't see.
What kind of feeling do you get left with when you don't have to swap any money, when you don't have to bring, you know, a $50 note and that has to change hands?
Nice. It's just no stress. You know, it's you don't think about it, and it's just you actually have a conversation with the people instead of thank you, walk away, and like, I paid too much for that. Is it any good? I don't know. You know, at least this is, you get to see it. You know, it's been grown. You
could, you know, locally it's healthy.
Yeah, exactly. So
more
yeah.
of a good faith type
it's
a, system.
Well, it's just to me it was relaxing, you know, and enjoying it.
Well, first of all, you have to have a really well calibrated set of scales. I actually have a set that did measure gunpowder. And so you measure it by the gram. If you're lucky enough and you've got enough, you might get a kilo or so, but I'm not up to that point yet. No way, not yet. I'd like to be.
Phil Tierney is talking about saffron, the world's most expensive spice. Hello, I'm Cherie von Hirschner. Phil and her husband Ted are growing the special crocus bulbs in raised beds on their small property at Merbau North in Victoria's Gippsland region. What started out as a weekend getaway has turned into a burgeoning small business, with Phil supplying farmers markets and restaurants in nearby Melbourne.
bit of a long story. We bought this place in 2009. We were both still working full-time down in the Melbourne suburbs. We were coming up here weekends. But after we'd been here, coming up here about 12 months, I said to my husband, we really should be growing something. The ground should be doing something while we're not here, even if it was vegetables for the family. And then as it happened a couple of weeks later at work during my lunchtime, I was sitting in the cafe and reading a garden magazine. And there was an article on saffron. So, you know, one of the requirements it was saying was full sun, slightly sloping land, north facing. And I thought, this is it. This is me. I'm going to have a go.
And have a go she did. Phil planted out the bulbs and waited for the first flowers to appear.
Well, I just sort of put them in the ground, and so there's no chemicals of any sort go near it. It's such a thrill to see the little shoots come up, and of course your first flower is just, you know, you're beside yourself.
She had just a few short weeks in autumn to pick the flowers before carefully plucking out the three red saffron stigmas, which make up the super expensive saffron threads.
Everything is done by hand. It's very labour intensive. And that's apart from the weeding, that's the most horrendous thing. Although I think counting the strands into the little bottles for the market is probably worse. And I say to Ted, don't talk to me, I'm counting. But it's a lot of work. You've got to pick them and then take them inside and prick out all the strands, the three strands in each flower. You have to dry them, and I have a little dehydrator now, but when I first started I was drying them on paper towel, just naturally. They were taking 5 days or so to dry. We've since got a little dehydrator, which is terrific. It's very versatile. You can use it in absolutely anything, and a lot of people relate it just to yellow-coloured rice. So I've spent the last 4 years or so doing farmers markets and educating people as to how you use it, how to infuse it. It's best infused or ground up in your mortar and pestle and infused in your liquid and then added to your dish. That way you get colour, flavour and aroma.
Now, as Phil says, saffron is much more than pialas and curries. It's great in desserts and even scrambled eggs. And then, of course, there's her special saffron scones. And that's, you've just rung the bell for Ted to come in for scones and saffron tea?
Yes, he hears that and he comes running. He knows it's scone time.
Okay, so we're sitting down here at the table and having some of your scones. A bit hard to imagine what the flavour might be like when you think of how beautiful the colour is, whether the flavour will be as bright as that. Cheese and chive saffron scones.
A little bit of parsley in there too.
These are some of the biggest scones I've ever seen. It's certainly quite an earthy taste to it.
Yeah. So you would put an inch or so of the tea into your teacup.
And it's a bright, beautiful bright yellow.
It's like oil, doesn't it? And pour that in. You can add a little bit of mint or a bit of honey or a bit of lemon if you prefer. But it's very refreshing just on its own. These scones is actually Ted's mum's recipe. She was a beautiful farmhouse cook.
Now, Ted, you grew up on a dairy farm.
Mum was the cook. The country table was absolutely full of food. There was just trays of food, cakes and things like that Mum had cooked. It was really good fun. It was quite funny the way people used to say, oh, scones are hard to rise and they're hard to do this and things like that. And I'd watch Mum and she'd be bashing the dough and chucking it around and everyone's going, oh, but they're not going to rise, and boom, up they'd come.
So just thinking that this scone recipe is one of the favourites that your mother used to cook, but did you ever imagine that perhaps that these scones would have a new twist to them with saffron?
No, and I don't think Mum did either.
Ted and Phil Tierney there, enjoying saffron-flavoured tea and scones with our reporter Cherie von Horschner at their small property at Merboon North in Victoria's Gippsland. Still to come on this special summer series of A Big Country, a paddock-to-plate story with a Chinese twist and a thorny harvest trail on Queensland's Sunshine Coast.
Push a branch down. This fruit here, very nice. These here. This size, 30 millimetres, is all right.
Bob Schultz is a finger lime grower on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. He's instructing his pickers on how best to approach the thorny bushes to get to the fruit. It's a job that takes protective clothing and a good deal of care if you're going to get through the day without drawing blood.
You look in here, you find more and more fruit that you can't see. You can't see it from the outside. You've got to pull the branch down so you can see in there. Don't pull it too close to you though, like here, otherwise the spines will get you.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Nichols. Finger limes are a tasty and versatile native fruit. Some people describe them as the caviar of the citrus world. They come in a variety of colours, tiny green, yellow, red and pink balls, just bursting with flavour. Bob Schultz planted out this orchard at Wamuran around 4 years ago and has now got about 1,200 shrubs growing in neat rows. Now, finger limes, absolutely delicious, pop in your mouth, perfect with salads, champagne, you name it.
Yes, very good with seafood and very good in custards, mousses, cream cheese, all those sorts of spread type things. Very good food decoration as well.
But Bob Schultz, they're an absolute bugger to pick.
They are a little tricky and they are a little difficult to pick, but it's, you know, you get used to it.
How many times have you been scratched to the point of drawing blood?
Many, many times. And a person my age, it doesn't take much to break my skin. But you have to learn how to handle them. You can, like all thorn trees, you can run your hand one way up a branch and it won't affect you at all. But if you run it the other way, you're in real trouble.
Any horticulture industry finds it hard to get pickers and maintain pickers. How do they go with the finger limes? Have you
They don't mind. They don't mind. It's not a terribly onerous job in the sense of bending or whatever, because they're really picking at standing height most of the time.
And I'm just loving the various outfits all your pickers have.
Yeah, it's pretty standard stuff, really. Thorn-proof gloves and arm protectors, which are sort of very light Kevlar sort of material.
You're the gladiators yes. of the fruit-picking world.
You could say that, yes, yes.
Like with what you're saying about the different varieties and their potential spikiness?
They're interesting to work with. Certainly a lot more challenging than most trees would be. Just some can, like, depending on the variety, some will have larger spikes, some will have shorter. The shorter can be harder spikes and hurt more than the long spikes. But yeah, you just sort of got to, you learn your varieties.
Learn to be prepared.
Yeah, yeah.
How much blood have you drawn?
Drawn blood a couple of times, but yeah, I've had me fair share of scratches.
Yeah. But oh, the fruit at the end.
Yeah, the fruit is good. It's really rewarding when you can see a whole big tray of fruit and think, oh yeah, I worked for that and I put in effort and finally I've got some results out of these trees.
How long have you been involved with the farm?
About a year now. Been here since the second stage was just bare earth, so it's been interesting to watch it grow and learn the process and all that, yeah.
Oh, there's so much to learn in terms of how to cultivate this native plant.
Yeah, there's heaps, like we're still learning. There's new problems every day. There's no real literature about it, like about the issues you get with it or how to grow it, so.
Real pioneering work.
Yeah, yep, certainly.
Yeah, my name's Alex Zhao. I'm the owner of Tea's Chinese Restaurant and Bass Valley Farms.
Alex Zhao is a busy, busy man. Not only is he the head chef at the family's Chinese restaurant at Sheffield in northern Tasmania, he's also in charge of the family farm down the road that supplies all the meat that's used here. Hello, I'm Margot Kelly. This is a paddock to plate restaurant tale with a Chinese twist. What's your role in the restaurant?
I'm a chef in the restaurant. It's hard work. Yeah, very late nights and...
Full-time?
Full-time, yep.
So you're a full-time chef?
Yep.
And a farmer?
Yep, that's right. Full-time chef and I see myself, I don't know, a part-time farmer, but it seems full-time both ways to me. Yeah, it's a lot of hard work.
You must love both of those things to not be able to give up one or the other.
Yeah, I love the farm very much. There was one stage where parents wanted to sell it, but I didn't want to. The farm and the restaurant complement each other. Without the farm, we wouldn't have the restaurant. We wouldn't have paddock to plate for the restaurant. Yeah.
The Zhao family arrived in Australia from the Xinjiang province in China back in the 1980s. Alex studied agriculture at university in Sydney. His cooking skills he got from his dad.
Our flavour is very unique. You won't get it anywhere else. We make all our sauces from scratch.
This paddock to plate Chinese restaurant is such a hit with locals and visitors that the families had to expand the restaurant into larger premises.
Yeah, this is the kitchen, that's the scullery. So we've got 8 woks, whereas in the old restaurant we only had 3 woks. So, another person would be fighting over a wok and, or jumping over someone to get to another thing. And yeah, my wife is a cook here as well, and my father, he doesn't want to retire, because he built the business too, and yeah, he does not want to retire, so he hangs around and does what he wants, and yeah, no complaints.
So you put a couple of extra woks in for him?
Yeah, there's some in the back there, you can stay in the back. It gets pretty hectic in here.
Alex Zhao has had to increase production down at the farm to keep up with demand at the restaurant.
Yeah, we're pretty self-sufficient. We have our own Angus lowland cattle. We cross them with Wagyus at the moment, and also Berkshire pork, Berkshire pigs, and Dorper lamb. They all are born and raised on our farm, and at the end of the day, when they're ready, they come into the restaurant. Yeah.
Chinese tourists are particularly keen to taste the locally produced pork.
We tell them, we try to market our stuff that, our pigs are free range and, raised humanely. And the Asian tourists will have more interest in it, so they select it on the menu. And yeah, so every second Asian tourist that come in order pork. Yeah, they're sort of amazed because they come into the restaurant, they walk through the front and sit down, and they just expect us to be any other Chinese restaurant that they go to. But as soon as they open up the menu and see that our stuff are born and raised on our own farm, and they're able to select it on the menu, and they're amazed.
What's it like for you raising these animals as a farmer and then plating them up as the chef?
I raise these animals, from the ewe, and then the ewe gets pregnant. She has a lamb, and it's a life cycle there that I see a beauty in. Because then when the lamb's ready for market, I'm sort of sad to see it go, but it has to go because we need to make money out of it. It's not all about money, but when I take the lambs to the abattoir, I'm happy that they're going there because I know that they've been raised correctly and humanely, and I've treated them well. They've had the best tucker, so I'm happy that they're going there. And when they're all processed and I pick them up from my butcher, I'm happy with the end product because not many people can see an end product from their own animals. And I'm very happy that I can see the end product and then cook it and plate it up, and it tastes delicious. Tastes amazing, yeah, so... yeah, I love it, yeah.
That's it, the lamb.
Wow, so quick.
Yeah.
Alex Zhao with some fast and furious wok action there in the family's Chinese restaurant in Sheffield in northwest Tasmania. Margot Kelly, the lucky reporter, about to tuck into that stir-fried homegrown lamb. And that's it in this special Food Bonanza summer episode of A Big Country. Join me, Edwina Farley, and the team for some more story highlights at the same time next week. Until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.